Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
New Jersey's got a lot of historic wows, from Victorian beach towns to Revolutionary War battlegrounds. Explore wow after wow at more than 463 historic landmarks in museums, lighthouses, and over 58 state and national parks. It's one wow after another after another. You get it. Find your wow at visitnj.org/history. New Jersey, little state, lot of wow.
Commandant, on the floor! Commandant, inspection! Muster up! Yes, let's sir. Go! Light it up! Move! Hands on heads! Hands on your heads! Stop it! Now! Out!
This is not an inspection, out. It is a robbery! Move. They've taken the tower in our communications. They're holding hostages, including my wife and
son. Move!
They've already killed, and I am sure that they will do so again, which is why I am urging you to cooperate.
Enough! Move! Move!
You are gonna load us out as fast as possible! Anyone doesn't want to hustle for the next 10 minutes, raise your hand. All right, up! 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 Let's go!
Hello and welcome to the Star Wars TV Cast, episode 34. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm James. This episode, we're covering Andor, season 1, episode 6, The Eye.
And finally, we get the episode,
finally,
I believe.
Finally, we get to The Eye. Finally, Jonathan, we reached The Eye. Thank fuck for that.
Exactly. A lot of patience was required in this slow burn, as we say once again. But this was a very exciting episode. But James, it's good to be back home and podcasting in the Star Wars TV Cast studio again. Where are you broadcasting from?
Again, I'm back home, actually. Yeah, I'm back on the East Coast.
And we're going to start with the Star Wars question of the week. And this time it's coming from James. James, what have you got for us?
All right, well, this one, okay, so like, let's keep in the theme of Andor and what's going on here and the sacrifice and everything. So, Jonathan, I need you to go back to A New Hope, choose one Rebel member with a speaking part in the film and have them sacrificed.
See, this is a difficult one because I thought, oh, that'll be easy. I'll just pick someone random.
Yeah.
But there are very few characters in Star Wars, actually, and each one of them will have major repercussions.
Or both, depending on who you choose.
Yes, exactly.
Because so you'd have no Kylo Ren if you choose badly here. So.
Yes, which was actually the point of my sacrifice. And I will sacrifice Han Solo as he's coming in and going, yee-haw, to save Luke Skywalker if Darth Vader suddenly sees him and avoids being being bumped into by his wingman who gets shot by Han to go and take him out. And then suddenly everything
is... Oh, my God, but hold on. But then you lose Chewie as well.
We lose Chewie, lose everyone.
Oh, I should never have asked this question.
One small moment.
Oh, yes, Jonathan, you are now fired from this podcast. that's pretty severe.
It is pretty severe. It's not someone who I wanted to remove, but I couldn't think of anyone else that did not have such a... everyone has a major impact.
And it was a trick question, though.
The story. I see. All right, so let me add one more. Maybe a lesser... it's the commander on the Star Destroyer when C-3PO and R2-D2 are released into their escape pod, and he goes, There's no life forms. Just let them go. And so what if he was replaced by someone else who said, there's no life forms in there, but take it out anyway, which would have been a sensible thing to do.
Oh, you're just ruthless. You basically killed off everything. George Lucas is coming for you, fucker.
No.
It's a trick question.
All right, James. All right, James. Come on then. Who would you have done?
Uncle Owen, because he gets killed anyway. But you've just soiled the whole fucking Star Wars universe. But anyway, that was the whole point of the question. It was a test, Jonathan. It was a test.
And, I wanted it to be meaningful.
You've certainly made it meaningful, mate. You just wiped out the fucking trilogy. So there we are. But anyway.
Does go to show how important each one of the characters
is. It was one of those questions. I came up with it and I thought, oh, this is a really clever question. And then I had to sit there for an hour myself going, you idiot, you don't have an answer. And I had to really sit and think about that. But, when we throw this open to the listeners, it's like, who would you execute in the name of the rebellion? Jonathan's killing everybody off, by the way.
Basically.
Oh, I guess I was just trying to be too clever. Sorry.
No, it was a good question because it just goes to show you how actually good the writing was in the New Hope, because every character resonated throughout the universe in each movie. So everyone is very important.
Or you could also look at it like they had a really lean budget and everybody that they filmed had to mean something. There was no disposable characters allowed.
No red shirts.
There was no Jar Jar in this one. Which, by the way, if we'd have opened it up to all films, it would have been a no-brainer.
That would be the first thought for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the eye.
Yes, back to the eye. Well, listen, let's do our first thoughts. I really obviously loved this episode. I thought it was all we hoped it would be. There was tense, meaningful action with blasters that actually worked and consequences for the actions. You know, and it's interesting because it seems that Andor is laid out in three episode arcs. So each season has the equivalent of four movies. So, you know, this wasn't really the culmination of six episodes. It was a culmination of this three episode arc, which is interesting going forward because then you are prepared for the pace.
Yeah,
exactly right. Mm. What did you think?
Oh my God. I mean, the 2 weeks of slow burn was definitely worth it. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is the best Star Wars episode outside of a movie there's ever been. But you don't have to take my word for it. Just look online at the reviews. I mean, I was reading a few. But like IGN's one of my favorites, and I always read theirs. And their headline is like gold standard masterpiece. And it ticks all boxes. I mean, it reminded me almost like we had the whole of Rogue One in 45 minutes.
Right.
Because you have an insane suicide mission.
Yeah.
With huge consequences. You know, the payoff will be amazing if they pull it off, but the sacrifice will be huge also. And, you know, we got all of that. I tip my hat to Susanna White and to Dan Gilroy.
Yes, exactly right. And for Tony Gilroy, I saw a quote from him from 2018. Oh, and going back to what you said, he says, I don't think Rogue One really is a Star Wars movie in many ways. To me, it's a Battle of Britain movie. And I thought that this was the quintessential war movie as we were talking about last week. And super happy with it and excited to break it down with you, James.
I know. Blow by blow.
Let's go.
Go for it. I shall let you lead.
All right, so episode 6 is directed by Susanna White, written by Dan Gilroy and created by Tony Gilroy. James, what's your first point?
There are many. So I'd love, you know, we start on the hilltop and it's like, is it dawn or dusk? I can't remember. Anyway, it's dawn, obviously, because Nemec turns around and says, I can't sleep.
Yeah.
So he's writing his manifesto and he writes... He writes about the role of mercenaries, basically the justification of them having claimed the team. And so his conscience is clear of having a paid sort of like bounty hunter in effect on his side. And so the Empire uses all, they don't care what they do. So like, why don't the rebels use all tools available to them? And by extension, tools are weapons and therefore mercenaries are an extension of that. And so he's So basically, he surmises that, you know, we're fighting fire with fire. You know, the Empire has no moral boundaries, so why should they? You know, so,
yeah,
which is interesting because you start to drift and I start to see this group moving into the fanatical cause area. Yeah. They're seeming to be a little bit hardcore, as we will discuss later, I'm sure. But I think this is an underlying theme of the arrogance. And, you know, the Cassian says the Empire doesn't care enough to learn. They don't have to. You mean nothing to them. And then Nemec gets a little bit riled up. You think it's worthless, then? You think we should be thankful? And then Cassian delivers that brilliant line, "Do I look thankful to you?" Fucking stone cold badass. All right.
So yeah.
It's just a great way to start off. And again, it's back to that World War II. You know, they're like packing up their camp and they're starting off and all the rest of it. And I thought it was a great lead into like one of the themes of the episode, which I'm sure you'll touch on, but how plump and arrogant, literally, the Imperials are. So anyway, I'll let you take it from there.
Right.
Let's move along and we can touch on that.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I just love this as I did in one of the great things about The Walking Dead and Game of Thrones that were two of my favorite shows ever in their prime was that no one is safe and no one is safe in Andor.
Oh, dear God, turns out. Well, apart from Cassian.
Well, apart from Cassian, yes. Yeah. We knew that there is one person with plot armor so thick that nothing can happen to him at all.
Unless he's a clone, yeah. Jonathan.
Yes, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah. But let's go forward assuming that he is not a clone we'll go forward to Rogue One and meet his untimely end with Jyn Erso. But what I found interesting in this, in Andor, was that the deaths were unceremonious versus the heroic deaths of Rogue One. Because when the initial cut of Rogue One came in, the powers that be said, we need to change the ending because people apparently just died. And so they decided to give everyone a heroic moment before they met their maker. And so the pilot went and grabbed the cable and to attach the cable. And then the monk blindly walks out to pull the lever. And Cassian and Jyn get the message out. And so before they all die, they have this moment of heroism. But here in Andor, you know, Tamarin is shot while running for cover.
Oh, God,
We'll come back to that in detail later, but Nemec's is crushed by a pallet and Skeens is shot by Cassian, you know. And
So by the way, spoilers, if you haven't watched the episode.
Yeah, well, I assume if you're coming for a podcast on the show that everyone will have watched it.
But if not,
I appreciate you listening. But it seems that I am the kiss of death because... James last week, when I was saying that my favourite characters would survive, it turns out that everyone that I mentioned as a great character going forward is now dead.
So rule number one, everyone, never go to Vegas with Jonathan.
But that was also interesting when he was talking about, Nemec was talking about, I can't sleep. Cassian says to him, "You'll be fine. You'll sleep when it's done."
God.
And I'm like, dun, dun, dun.
I'm going to quote Brian Adams then. "You'll sleep when you're dead."
Yeah, exactly. So that was a little bit of a foreshadowing, which was interesting. So this is another series where anyone can die and no one is safe, which makes it all the better for me.
It's high stakes. Yeah, it's great. It's really, really good.
Yeah, and I just loved how all the blast, people were getting shot and
accurately
one
right?
shot
yeah.
accurately
yeah.
So maybe it is just a stormtroopers but your basic Imperial soldiers are a little bit better trained.
Yeah, it's like they manned the Death Star with like sort of like first week rookies or something. Yeah. they couldn't hit Luke if they tried.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. But but they were running, so they were running and diving.
Of course, in those helmets. I mean, when I run in my stormtrooper helmet, I can't hit shit.
All right, James, what's your next point?
Well, I have to say, I mean, you touched on it before about Tony Gilroy sort of saying in 2018 that I don't think Rogue One is a Star Wars movie, it's more Battle of Britain. And
yeah.
I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but not necessarily, but the music through specifically this episode, just the way, music was amazing. Oh my God, Nicholas Britell, who's won awards for Moonlight, and he also did the score for Vice with Christian Bale.
Right.
But the way it builds and builds, and I'm sure you're going to talk about this, but I'm just going to jump in and mention it. The Alkenzie Air Base, when they're running to the TIE fighters, the way the music builds and they're rushing to the ships, and it's like, I mean, that is, to me, that is a Star Wargasm. It's just like, it's just the sound, and they're like, it's so mechanical, and their music's building, and they're in there, and they're clamping down, and da-da-da, and they're like World War II bomber pilots about to launch. But I know you're going to go back to that point. But it's more about the music. It's just what I'm talking about here. It's just from earlier on, like when the squad fall in and escort the commandant and his family back to the base, from that point on, the music starts. It plays off of the tribal chant, and it starts to slowly build and build and build. And it reminds me of, actually talking of Battle of Britain, it reminds me of the soundtrack to Dunkirk that Hans Zimmer did.
Right. That was amazing, wasn't it?
The insane sort of like metronome, sort of the constant pacing and the building.
Yeah, the building, tick, 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 tick.
Exactly. And I feel this had the same kind of drama. The music swept it along perfectly. So hats off to the composer for Nicholas Britell for like a beautiful, beautifully delivered score for this week.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And you know, music, as I've said many times, is really one of the backbones of the Star Wars universe. And I think the music is great in this series. And if you listen to all the way to the end of our podcast, I have left on the more emotive Andor theme, which is a beautiful thing to listen to. So stick through to the end.
Yeah, I also just to mention again, it's like, it's great that they take a little bit of risk. I mean, we all love John Williams and what he's done.
Yeah.
And there have been a few composers who've come in the TV shows and they've riffed off of Williams-esque music. It's like, within this series, they don't seem to be afraid to do their own thing.
No.
And it's great because we've had, you know, we've had Blade Runner-esque, Vangelis moments earlier in this. And then this one, like I say, feels a bit Zimmer-esque in places.
Yep.
And it fits perfectly. And it modernizes it in a way. Which I think is commendable.
Yeah, look, I think they've been doing everything right with this series, and there have been some complaints that it's taking a bit too long to get going. But now that I know the format of the series, the three episode arcs, it all makes sense. Each three part series is like a movie with a beginning, a middle, and the end, and the middle tends to be a bit slow. And if we know that that's what we've got to look forward to, then you can be a bit more patient for it. And I wouldn't be surprised if people are going to save up three at a time. So if that's you, welcome.
Binge bursting. We'll call it binge bursting.
Exactly.
I spoke to a friend yesterday and they were convinced that episode six was the finale. Because I'm like, right. No, it's only halfway. And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah. I mean, because it feels like a finale.
Yeah.
We can think of this as four mini seasons, maybe, instead of two seasons.
Yeah, that's how I think they're laying out the series of 12 episodes, is four movies, basically. So we've got a new arc next time, and now that the rebellion has caught the eye of the Empire, it should
keep expanding. Like what you did there, Jonathan. Like what you did there. Very good, very good. You should be on the radio. I like it.
That's right. Well, yeah. Well, breaking with kind of the regular format, I am going to do a heist recap, and because I feel like the whole episode was the heist, and we'll just jump in and discuss any points that are relevant or kind of mirror what you've got down there, James.
So
great. It kicks off with everyone checking their comms on the old Empire gear, and it's Echo 1 to Valley 1, so we've got the two call signs.
Can I just interject there? Echo 1, referencing to?
Yeah.
It's Echo Base on Hoth.
Oh, yes. I couldn't quite get the reference, but yeah, I was trying to drag it in. But yeah, Echo Base on Hoth, exactly right. And then we hike to the position, and during this hike, we find out that Tamarin was a stormtrooper. And I wish we got to delve into that a bit more.
Yeah, that's great. And especially that when Skeen mentions you should have been around when Cinta found out.
Yeah.
The whole family was slaughtered by them. It's like, ooh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Gone too soon, Tamarin. Mm-hmm. And then we see the first meteors start to fly past, you know, raising the tension of the viewers and distracting the Imperial soldiers. Mm-hmm. And then they just start to escort the Ardani, and they're told by Tamarin if we're either from the garrison or from the TIE fighter garrison of Alkenzi, because they've brought over troops to bolster their numbers. And they're basically hiding in plain sight, trying to act, as we know, act like the Imperial troopers. And we cut over to Cinta and Vel, and they're hiding, and while one of the troopers takes a piss on their position. And then they jump in the water undercover from the three meteors coming past in their underwater jet-powered scooters.
Oh, my God.
Nice to see.
Oh, my God. I have to talk about this, if that's okay.
Yeah, go.
So,
of course, jump in anytime.
This SBS insertion, like this special boat squad, yeah, like the British underwater SAS. Ah, I just love it, man. The kit they're wearing, I mean, yeah, it's so cool, but it feels very real world. I feel that is actually what the British special sort of water service is wearing.
Yeah, very SEAL Team 6 exactly, as well. So exactly. It's just, I love that special ups insertion. Mm. Yeah.
Interestingly, yeah, it's really, you know how many times that Imperial bases being infiltrated underwater, don't you?
That's right.
Because think about it.
Obi-Wan just swimming past the window.
Yeah, yeah. And then Qui-Gon Jinn did it with didn't they swim in with Jar Jar as well?
Yeah, they when they went to the Gungan homeworld, they swam in with their
they did that, but they infiltrated
respirators.
But didn't they infiltrate Mustafar from underwater as well? One of the planets on Mustafar as well, I think. Anyway, delete me. I may well be wrong there.
Can't remember. Mustafar. Was Mustafar a planet of lava? Well, so I'm not sure if they're going underwater.
Somebody's got it wrong on the internet. Sorry.
Don't get technical with me.
Sorry. Cut me out. Cut that bit out.
No way. We're keeping this in.
No, you fucked up my research.
Yes, well, we're getting off here. We're getting off. We're back to Andor. Wrong. And so then we cut to the Commandant, and he's getting ready for the ceremony. And, of course, his belt doesn't fit, which I thought was hilarious. And it reminded me of Game of Thrones again when the king asked for a chest plate stretcher.
But doesn't he... I'm trying to think, what does he say? He says his sash has been compressed.
Yes. It's shrunk over time, seeing it's been in storage.
Oh,
and it's the interesting thing of being posted to an outlying base. Like his wife obviously wants to get off planet and back into the center. No one wants to be in the outer rim.
In the outer rim, no, exactly.
So then we cut to the scene where they're exchanging four-horned goat skins. And, of course, the local Aldani leader is looking at him with disdain. And all through this, the lads are checking with each other because I think we've got a late check-in happening. We cut to the scene where Cinta and Vel are on the dam climbing that ladder, waiting for the people to run past. And then they hop up and they jam the comms and they're waiting for a go. But she seems to hesitate before taking the plunge, before giving the go. Yeah, but what did you think she was waiting for?
I don't know. I mean, this is an interesting sort of character point, because like Vel up to this point has been stone cold and like on point and driven. And then it's like she's all of a sudden she's nervous, she's anxious, maybe, I don't know, it's stage fright or it's whatever. And it takes, you know, by this point it's obvious that we know that her and Cinta are in a relationship.
Yeah.
And then Cinta like reassures her and it's just some calming words from her, and then she collects herself again and they're all good. But
but even the go she gave her was not that convincing.
No, it wasn't, was it really?
But I think I think maybe at that point she was realizing that might be the last time they see each other, and the gravity of the situation I think had fallen on top of Vel, and the 6 months of training all suddenly gets all very real.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking about gravity of the situation, Jonathan.
Yes.
That rappel moment.
Ah, that was fantastic when they fast roped down the dam.
And did it remind you of anything?
It reminded me of many things, James. What did it remind you of?
It's GoldenEye, isn't it?
Oh,
yeah. Mr. Bond.
That's right.
Leaping off the dam. It was like epic. It was classic sort of like moment. I just love that little nod there. It's great.
And I must say the cinematography in this one has been pretty good, because that was a beautifully framed shot of them going down. And there are many other great framed shots in this that every frame a painting.
I want to say that this doesn't feel like a lot of it's shot in the volume, in the, you know, in the screen room, because it feels very real world.
Well, that's the thing.
It's very convincing. I mean, I know it's a lot of it's filmed in England, and hence the cold dampness. And I presume they're just out in the valleys of
Wales. I've got a reference for that when we get to the news section later, because it is shot in Scotland, and that is the big difference with this, is that a lot of it is shot on location using real world structures. They are in the Highlands of Scotland, and that's why it has this great look and feel to it, because it starts to feel in the volume, although I loved it in The Mandalorian, and I will say that this episode is second only to the finale of Mandalorian Season 2, where, spoilers ahead, Luke Skywalker arrived. And that had me, crying man tears for about half an hour while I was watching it on my own in Los Angeles.
You were in lockdown, though, weren't you?
Yeah, this is true.
You hadn't seen a human being for weeks, so we'll let you
know. No, exactly.
CG Luke will bring anyone to tears after being locked in a room for that. Yeah.
And, all right, so they fast rope down the dam. But we'll get to, I've got some information on the locations, which we'll get to news later on.
And we can set up tours. Anyone wants to go to Scotland, I've got a couple of mates who can take you on a coach if you want.
In a dodgy old van with a bottle of whiskey.
Exactly. For only $10,000, we'll take you.
What was it called? Mednog, that's right, with a couple of bottles of Mednog.
Complimentary Mednog with every ticket.
Cinta and Vel fast rope down the dam, and the rebel squad escorts the commandant and the family. So Cassian locks the door, and they go through, and then the colonel pulls the gun on Nemec, and we have a moment of tension before Cinta comes out of nowhere and just basically shoots him in the head.
Can I just say, numero uno squad member of the week, hands down, Cinta.
Yes.
Smoking. Like, just
well, as badass. You said, but as Nemec said that she is the, well, no, was it Skeen said that she's the stone cold killer of the group, and she is proving that.
And we also have learned that her whole family was like massacred by stormtroopers, so she has an axe to grind for sure. but I just want to mention, as this standoff is going off, Vel has the quote, "One path, one choice. We win or everybody dies." And that's the ultimate rebellion mantra. I have to say, this team, right, is feeling pretty, I mentioned it earlier, pretty fucking fanatical now. We are in Saw Gerrera territory. Because, we have never seen rebels taking children and innocents hostage at gunpoint and threatening to kill them. Yep. So it's, it is wet work. It is black ops. And I'm going to quote one of my all-time heroes here, Jonathan.
Yes.
Sergeant Price.
Yes.
When you take the gloves off, you get blood on your hands. We get dirty, that's right, so baby. The world stays clean. And that is real world. No, seriously, that's from Call of Duty. But anyway, you've got to love Sergeant Price.
One of the great characters of all time.
Oh, love that man.
I would follow him into battle anywhere.
Yeah, I do nightly. Sadly, it's not for real. But anyway. in all seriousness, we know this, that there are groups that work in the shadows and stuff, and the fact that Star Wars is, observing this and is showing that side of it is great, but it is still a little bit concerning to see our heroes, as we'll call them, putting AK-47s to the heads of children and stuff.
But, that's it. This
times.
Is not your...
Desperate times, yeah. Jonathan.
This is not your black and white New Hope Empire Strikes Back style of Star Wars. This is your grey area... beginning of the rebellion, where you have to do bad things to get things going.
Exactly, as everyone who has mentioned, that's what Gilroy was planning to do, and is doing it with aplomb. So,
So they move on, and as the Aldanis celebrate,
can I just say the leader of the Aldanis? I had to freeze frame so many times. I swear that was Bryan Cranston. And I double checked it wasn't, but it's the kind of thing Star Wars, you suddenly get a cameo and it's like, hey, Walter White's leading the Eldaris.
That's so funny.
Seriously, go back and watch it. And it's like, you have to do a double take. It's like,
yeah.
Anyway.
All right, so we're moving on, and as I said, the Bryan Cranston is leading the celebrations with the Aldarnis, and they're saying that we need the commandant to open the vault, and he's like, it's a code from the airbase. Vey says, "We know, we just need your handprint." And as you said, she says, "One path, one choice. We win or everyone dies." Mm. And they get into the comms room, and the comms are jammed, and it's captured, and we have the Aldarnis chanting away. Mm. And he says, "Why should I help you? You'll kill us anyway." Vey says, "That's what you would do." So we're not quite at that level of desperation yet, where the Empire, where the Rebels are just as bad as the Empire, but we're getting close.
Just to observe, things get muddy in the grey area, and that's it. It's like it starts to get very hard to define, moral compasses as we go back to what Nemec said at the beginning, where we are literally fighting fire with fire. So
exactly right. And so we leave Cinta guarding the family, and then they take the elevator down to where the vault is. As they're lining up, Vel says, Clem, you're out first. And I thought that was interesting, just when I thought he was part of the team.
Yeah.
And was also like, what are you doing? He's the only pilot you've got if you actually pull this off. And Clem's dead in the first round of shooting. I don't know how you're going to get out of here, but maybe it just shows...
Maybe that goes back to how observant he was. In the episode before, where he knows, you're right-handed, but you shoot left, and they're like, maybe he's better at corners. Oh, yeah. But a bit like you, Jonathan, corners and doors. He's just like checking everything as he goes through. But I did love that. That was very precise military movement as they're coming through that tunnel. And again, you mentioned it's real locations in Scotland, so it has that feel of an old castle or tunnel or something.
Yeah, it really does. And they come out of the elevator, and we of course see the guards playing cards with their guard down. Yeah, Tamarin yells out, "Commandant on the floor, inspection. They fall for that quickly, and then they pull their guns, and it's like, line it up, hands on your heads. And the commandant urges them to cooperate.
Yeah.
And then they yell out, "You're going to load up as fast as possible, and we are off. The heist is underway."
I've got to say, at this point, so you suddenly come in, and I don't know why, when we saw the... it didn't click when I saw it last week and stuff, but that is a shit ton of gold credits.
I know.
And that is a big ship, and it's just a ridiculous amount. And like, how are you expected to load that in 10 minutes? And... Immediately a light bulb went off my head, like, where have I seen this before? And I'm like, oh my god, it's the original Italian Job with Michael Caine.
Right.
Remember when they're in there and they've got three minis and they're trying to lift gold bars and they're dropping them on the floor and the chassis are going on them and stuff. And it's like, how did they ever think in 10 minutes they were going to load all of those creds into the truck? And sure enough, we have the classic where they spill them and they're on the floor.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Well, I think maybe they were just going to, they had a certain amount of time and they were just going to take as much as they could and then get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
It was super satisfying to watch the hand go onto the pad, the green lights light up as Cassian jumps into the ship and powers up. And what a beautiful, beautiful room this room is, don't you think? With the ship just hanging on the overhead rail and it was like a submarine base. It felt like
definitely. Yeah, again, felt very World War II in its construction and stuff. And you've got this old clunker of a brick, I think, as Cassie described before, and then you have this gleaming stack of gold. Great room for a shootout. Which brings us to your description of the firefight, Jonathan, which I imagine will be shot by shot, blow by blow. I'm just going to interject here one thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
The AK-47s fire lasers, so I'm happy. I'm all good.
I know, exactly right. There were no bullets here. But I kept trying to work out what gun they were, and they weren't E-11s or anything I can recognize, so we'll just refer to them as the AKs. So the commandant opens up the bars with his handprint, and then they blow the restrainers, and bingo, they are in. And then Skeen yells, yeah, let's go. And I noticed, I don't know if you noticed, the word Skeen grabs the T-21.
Oh, I knew you were going to bring that up. Yes. I was waiting.
So if any of you that has played the Star Wars Battlefront 2, that was my go-to rifle for many a game.
Heavy duty.
And I've got a little definition, if I may, James. The T-21 was a heavier standard issue weapon that could be carried by a single soldier. Rebel troopers of the Republic Army carried T-21s into battle during the later stages of the Clone Wars, and the weapon was carried over in the transition from Republic to the Empire. Yeah, and due to the portability, it was also popular with the Rebel Alliance. But this is a heavy single-shot rifle, and we saw it in use later on. At this point, Kimsey overhears the transmission.
Kimsey. Can I just say, his room is pretty awesome. His signal room or whatever. It's, oh my God, it's like, I mean, like, how many LEDs and switches? Like, again, production design dream. Like, I need you to build a room with 4 million switches in it, please. Like, yeah. Fucking great. So, and I love that nothing's labelled.
It's all just switch,
and switch, and they've all got just red lights or white lights. So, like, how the hell?
Well, Harrison Ford, when they were filming The New Hope and Empire, when he's in the pilot seat of the Millennium Falcon, he always said it was three switches. No matter what he was doing, when he was about to take off, he's like, click, click, click.
All right.
Like three switches before anything can happen. So that was one of the rules of Star Wars.
Star Wars rules. How about my old car? I think it was. Yeah, to try and start it three times.
And just after we hear that Kimsey overhears the transmission and realizes that something fishy is going on, while the others are loading the loot, we cut to Cinta in the comms room, and we hear, Tower One, this is Alcansi Wing Command requesting status rep. We have a vault breach indicator lighting up over here.
Okay. Now, at that point, what did you think she was going to do?
Yeah, exactly right. I thought she was going to either lean into it and saying, we have a radiation leak here, nothing major.
Everything's under control, situation normal. Everything's fine here. How are you?
Everything's under control, situation normal.
I thought she was going to
boring conversation anyway. And they just,
exactly. Right, so. But no, she just flicked some switches, unfortunately.
She's better than Han. So. Ooh, exactly. Did I say that? Well, you just killed him.
Well,
anyway,
Han
so
doesn't exist.
Han doesn't anymore. Exist anyway.
So Cinta turns off all the lights, and which was a a plan. Yeah, exactly. But it actually leads to greater distraction because all the other Imperial soldiers look up to the amazing display that happens that's happening in the sky. Kinsey is heading down with the squad, and the rebels continue to load, and the eye begins to in earnest, and we finally see what all the fuss is about. God. And wasn't that an amazing shot, James?
It was incredible to see the Bifrost.
Yeah.
No, I did joking aside. It's brilliant. What I love is, I think it's a scene later when it's almost finishing, but you have the local tribes literally in tears and when they're looking. But also, there's a bunch of the Imperial troopers just in awe. And I just wonder if maybe a few of them maybe questioned their cause at this point.
Well, maybe. Exactly right.
But it was a beautiful thing to witness.
I thought the design of it was incredible. And it was interesting because after we've been speaking so much about the dull, desaturated colours, the greens and the browns and everything and the blacks, that suddenly we have a sky lit up with so much color that it would make Marvel blush. Yeah. And
Or Sue.
Very Guardians of the Galaxy. It was a shift in the series and maybe that's for things to come. We're going to go back into a more expanded universe of color and space battles, and the next three episode set might be a bit more colorful than the army drab that we've seen.
I wouldn't get your hopes up. I think it no, but it was definitely because I think they had to do something. The talk of the eye, we've had talk of the eye for day, you know, week after week after week, and everything. So like, it had to be spectacular, and they pulled it out of the bag. So it's pretty special.
Yeah, I think they really achieved what they were going after.
Mm. Meanwhile, Jonathan, the firefight continue.
The firefight continues.
People die.
But then Lieutenant Gorn arrives, and the commandant sees him, and he yells out, "You're going to hang for this!" And Gorn says, 7 years serving you, I deserve worse for that." But at this point, this is where the TIE fighter porn happens. we cut to the other base, and we see just racks of TIE fighters as they're getting loaded and about to.
Backlit by the eye, by the greeny sort of like the turquoisey sort of like steel bluey sort of hue behind them. I won't steal your thunder. Go on.
Let's both talk about this. You watch as they rack up and they lock into place.
What's the mechanical chunk? And when the pilot jumps in, and it's so World War II. He's physically closing the lid himself. Dialing up his snooker cue balls.
Yes. But I thought that was one of the most beautiful shots of the series, was that wide shot of the pilot coming down the ladder, and he opens up the lid to the TIE fighter. And it's always interesting to see the scale of the size of the pilot to the actual ship. Mm. It always looks a bit bigger than what it is. But then he drops down inside, and you get these classic shots of the pilots that were, you know, lifted straight from A New Hope. But then we hear the klaxon going,
and again with the music.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
The klaxon is in rhythm to the music, and it's just perfectly forming, and it's on the boil. It's all on the boil at this point, Jonathan. It's like,
at this point, I'm getting very excited.
Oh my God, I'm getting excited talking to you, and I've watched it three times. Sorry, everybody, but like, it's just like, this is one episode that I happily watch multiple times before even sort of like doing notes or anything. So
yeah, me too. And after weeks on the road, and thank you, dear listeners, for your patience as we try to make this happen on the road. But I finally saw an episode on my 65-inch LED TV.
Not just on your laptop on a plane.
No, exactly. And it was amazing. Mm. I'm so jealous of all you guys that have got to see it in this state so far. But it really is a film quality at times, and when I saw that the TIE fighters being wrapped up to leave, I was like, I can't believe I'm seeing real Star Wars again.
Very, very beautiful, special, and visceral as well. Like I said, like the physically opening and closing the lid as they get in. I love the fact that they do it themselves.
And then the klaxon is going, and then Kenzie enters the room and from the elevator, and he goes, "What's going on here?" And then Tamron yells out, "This is a classified mission, and you're not cleared to be here." And at that point, of course, our dear Commandant has a heart attack.
Yeah, fat,
yeah. And then all, and then all hell breaks loose.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Crane takes a soldier out with his T-20 wound. Gorn gets hit out of nowhere and goes down. Everyone takes cover, and then blaster fire starts ringing out to deadly effect.
I know it's kiss of death because earlier on we were told that Tamarin was ex stormtrooper, but like he gets taken out with one shot, and I have to say, he goes down. There's no death crawl to cover or someone stretching out to help him. He's gone. He's like wallop, gone straight away, and there's no hesitation. Everyone, like, they mourn their loss in the blink of an eye, and they just carry on. Ruthless. They're ruthless.
Yes, and that happens when Vel yells out, "I'm pinned down," and Tamarin screams out to cover me, and Skeen says, "I got you," but he doesn't look.
He doesn't.
Confident, does it? But he's got his T-21. He starts firing away, but he gets return fire, and then, as you said, Tamarin just gets hit and goes down.
Gone.
And that is the last we see of him. Yeah. And at this moment, while Cassian's starting the ignition sequence, he gets attacked by an Imperial soldier.
The big one that he bullied with gunpoint earlier. He's clearly out him for him. Is that right? He's like,
and a nice hand-to-hand battle ensues.
And then it's, of all people, Nemec with like the pinpoint shot, the two of them scuffling on the floor, and the little kid, the philosopher, just pops him from across the room with a pistol.
Exactly.
It's like, damn, boy. So you could be great for the cause. I'm like, oh, maybe not.
Yeah, they look, Cassian's face is like, he was like, oh, wow, okay, that could have been both of us, but thank you. And as speaking from last, a couple of weeks ago, the only in Star Wars that you mentioned, a couple of missed shots really results in outbursts of steam back into which burns them, and so they manage to get the door.
There's so many steam pipes in space. It's just baffling. I mean, I know the steam puck is a thing, but like it's just too much.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, what are they powering with all these things?
I know,
hydraulics.
Yeah, well, of course, it's the hydraulics when they bring the ramp down and it has to let the steam. Anyway.
Well, no, it's classic Star Wars. The doors close and we see the TIE fighters launch, and there's this beautiful shot of them, three of them, coming out over the Highlands.
Can I just say, it's an Air Force base. TIE fighters? Just three?
Well,
Don't defend the Empire. Go on, then. What?
I think that maybe you're right. There were only three, but I think that's. I don't think that this was such a. It is a backwater place, which is why the rebels hit it, maybe because it wasn't defended as strongly as it should be. But yeah, you're right. No. They should have had a full squadron at least 12 TIE fighters.
But you're right, actually, because I think earlier in the series they'd mentioned that the arrogance of the Empire, they thought nobody would ever try and do this. So I seem to remember us talking about this a few weeks ago, and I made the joke about an exhaust port then. So I went,
exactly.
But yeah, fair enough. So they only launched three TIE fighters. That'll be fine. That'll do.
Yeah. But again, these beautiful shots of the TIE fighters coming out,
Yeah, they're beautifully lit above by the eye, and they're just skimming the ground, and because they have to fly low The interior shot, the TIE fighter, and he clearly can't get a lock on anything. His comms are gone and stuff because of the interference from above. And it's,
brilliant. And then the transport gets launched, which I love that there's a shot of the big engines just blasting out and knocks over all. Knocks over all the Imperials with the backwash. So again, it's a series where there is physics, and if you're standing behind an engine, you will at least get knocked over.
Can I also say, like, this is the ship that Cassian described as a brick, right?
Yeah.
That's a pretty fucking fast brick, if ever I've seen it. That's pretty awesome going down that tunnel. I was like,
Four engines. Yeah, that was a beautiful launch sequence. But it led to the pallets of credits crashing into Nemec. And I'm like, oh no, he's going to be the philosopher in a wheelchair.
That's what I thought. I thought we've got Professor X now. Here we go.
Yeah. Exactly right.
And then of course we continue with your escape story, Jonathan, and we will get to what I was going to moan about in a minute.
So. Go on, and then there's this gorgeous shot of the family watching them leave, silhouetted against the eye.
Well, and the family is literally free. They're free from the fat commandant husband because he's had a heart attack, and they're obviously released by the rebels as well. So
yes, exactly.
Everyone lives happily ever after in that family.
Yeah. Well, now that their husband that has brought all their position and wealth has gone, the wife did look a little bit worried.
Yeah, but I wonder what the life insurance is like.
No, that's the true. Hello, Empire Life Insurance. Can I help you?
No, you're not covered.
My husband had a heart attack during a robbery that he allowed to happen. Yes, I'm
terribly sorry. Was he complicit in the robbery or not? Or yes. Did he give away his palm print? I'm afraid you're not eligible.
Yes, you were no longer covered for your insurance. Cut to them moving in with Khan's mum.
Yeah. Subletting a room off.
Exactly. Anyway, we digress.
That's our side story.
They pull Nemec out from behind the pallet, and there's this gorgeous shot of Cassian silhouetted against a beautifully coloured sky with the eye going on. And Cassian's calling for advice on where to go, and Vel pulls out a med spike.
There we go. Green med spike, of course.
And the TIE fighters come screaming out in hot pursuit, but Cassian's flying blind. But of course, Nemec pops a Polaroid camera.
Oh my God, he pops a Polaroid camera. Yeah. Can I also say, this is probably the most gorgeous space chase battle.
It really is.
Ever. The physics of it, the streaming comets and shafts of light of that, and then swirling up and down and through it. And it's just a love fest.
It really is. It really is a great payoff from all the dullness and color we've been seeing. Nemec starts screaming out. He you see him actually lock onto a proper flight path with his navigator, and then he just
Polaroid 500
out,
navigator.
Yeah, he screams out, "Climb, climb!" And you do see a gap in the clouds. And on Twitter, I've seen that this is perhaps a mirroring to the last thing that K2SO says to Cassian in Rogue One.
Oh, because it's a climb. Yeah.
So another one of Cassian's
sidekicks. That's a bit of a stretch,
down.
That is, but yeah, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Twitter, you know.
Oh, I know, that's what I'm saying. It's like Elon Musk.
And then, except then he says, "Dive!" And there's more glorious TIE fighter shot. And you see it from the inside of the TIE fighter looking out. That was a great shot. Until the TIE fighters get very conveniently taken out by the meteors that our heroes manage to avoid for that small gap in the clouds.
Well, can I just point out as well? I mean, one of them gets taken out. The second one clips something and then crashes into the third one. How many times have we seen two TIE fighters? Like, have they not learned to fly in a formation where they don't crash the fuck into each other? I mean, it's like, guys, come on.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly. Like, that's,
you see, it's the classic, he loses one of his wings off the side and he tumbles into the other one. It's like, oh God. That should be in TIE Fighter Pilot 101 lesson. When another TIE fighter is tumbling towards you, bank hard.
Hard. Or can we space ourselves out just a little bit more?
Just a little bit wider. So, anyway, nitpicking.
I don't know. That's very important.
Oh, that was my only in Star Wars moment. There you go. For the week. So. Yeah. When under fire, TIE fighters magnetically attract to each other.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there was that ridiculous one in Ryan Johnson's Star Wars film when all the bombers get hit by one TIE fighter and they all take each other out.
Oh, is that the bit with the bombers where there's actually gravity in space, Jonathan? Is that the bit?
There is gravity. No, because it was a magnetic. They were magnetic rail bombs, or they just had the momentum when they dropped out. No, there is no gravity in space.
Ryan Johnson.
And so the transport flies through a gap in the clouds, and finally we are back in space, and it's glorious to see ships flying through space again. But we see Cinta escape while everyone is looking awestruck.
Yeah, now can I just talk about this for a minute?
Yeah.
So Cinta's left there, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I'm like, okay, is she going to slip away quietly and find a way off planet or do something? Mm. Or is she, because she's so hardcore and motivated, is she now going to like embed herself as a sleeper agent amongst the Imperials? I don't know. I'm just, who knows? Because I thought
it was a very odd thing to just have no plan for getting her out. I don't like, you know, what's her plan?
Yeah, it very strange, because it's not like she was on a different point of the base. She was only with the family, like, I don't know, I'm guessing one turbo lift away or something. So
Well, I guess she was there to hold them.
Yeah, I guess so. But interestingly, she doesn't die, because you would have thought if she was there to valiantly hold them off, that they would have just sort of wasted her as well, but they don't. So she has a part to play.
So, yeah, hopefully so.
Exciting.
We just see her.
Great, I think. I'm really excited to see more of her, so it's good.
Yes, do not question her when she has a blaster in her hand.
I would not mess with that woman.
No. There's a discussion on board where Nemec is injured and whether they're going to go to a doctor to save him. And then I thought that Skeen was being so nice to defend him and try and get to a doctor. But perhaps he was just trying to divert them somewhere so he could steal all the money.
Dude, I mean,
and I think this brings us to one of yours.
Oh my God. I mean, I am confused, thrown and upset by the post-scape events. I mean, quite honestly, I mean, yeah. So Skeen clearly sort of, I think clearly does care for Nemec, and he convinces Cassian to sort of side with him to detour to the awesome four-armed doctor. There you go, Jonathan. There's your alien. You got your alien.
We have an alien.
Interestingly, has the same kind of prosthetic augmentation. Sorry, as on Cloud City.
Brain.
Lando's sort of sidekick and that. And stuff.
Oh, that's interesting.
The headphone style of the eyes and stuff. But anyway, and he's got four arms and he's great. Anyway, we'll get to that. The whole Skeen thing. That threw me completely, because I thought, you know, we have this moment outside where they're like, do you think he'll make it? And they're just sitting there. And you think, because what's gone before, we felt that these two have bonded. And to be fair, they have. Because Skeen tells him about his pitch of like, you know, we could just run. He goes like, you're just like me. You're born in a hole and all we know is to climb over the people, over someone else to get out. And first of all, I thought, all right, Skeen is testing Cassian's faith.
That's what I thought. Yeah, as well.
But then hold on a fucking minute. Cassian just pops him straight away. Just like one shot. And I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, like, and interestingly.
Well, it seems to be Cassian's signature move now. It's just a blindside shot to the head.
It's like, I mean, 3 weeks ago, he was like, wouldn't say boo to a goose. And was like, oh, and now he's just fucking killing everyone. But it's interesting because I read up it was, if you go back to A New Hope and Solo in the bar and Han doesn't shoot first, and you know, because that was the thing, and that was always George Lucas's point, is like, he's a hero, he can't fire first,
right?
And again, this, you know, like Tony Gilroy puts us in a world where like they will do anything to do what they have to do, but I just think this is wrong. I think surely Cassian would like subdue Skeen,
tie him
up, and then like drag him in front of Vel to question what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
This one thing, like I said, it upset me because I really liked Skeen's character.
So did I.
But it also upset me. I thought maybe this might, I mean, I'm sure, you know, Dan and Tony Gilroy will prove me wrong, but it just felt like a little bit like sloppy writing, like conveniently, like, we're going to do this.
I agree. I think that was a little bit too convenient and a little bit odd and a little bit out of character from what they've built up with Skeen.
Well, both of them were out of character, I thought, a little bit.
Mm. And I just assumed it was a test to see if Cassian was going to betray them. But in the end, no, Cassian didn't even wait to find out.
No, he's like, give me the money, I'm going. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, he just likes to use that gun.
he does. I mean, it's a nice gun, to be fair.
That's true.
And then, interestingly, obviously, Vel insists on giving him Nemec's manifesto, which obviously, one read of that and he's going to be hooked. It's going to be like reading Harry Potter. He'd be hooked and that'd be it. And he'll be joining the rebellion. Like, I don't know whether it'll be through guilt or enlightenment or a combination of both, but I'm sure there's going to be some, Yeah, there's be some soul searching by our Mr. Andor, I think.
So I agree. It really is, because he wasn't a complete convert, and he was only wanting his money and everything. But you could tell that he's, you know, it still feels he's looking for somewhere to belong to, and Nemec was getting to him. And I'm actually still so shocked that they, you know, that they killed him off, because he was such a great character and he was really interesting, you know, a more thoughtful rebel and philosophical. And I kind of enjoyed his theories on the Empire and how people reacted to him. I was looking forward to him being basically the heart of the group going forward.
Are you talking about Nemec? Or are you talking
Nemec, about, yeah, about Nemec? Nemec. Yeah.
Well, I think he's almost like Yoda. He lives on through his manifesto.
Yeah.
That's probably it. But I mean, I thought you were talking about Scheme for a minute there, and I thought he would have a, I don't know, I just really liked him. I thought he'd have a really interesting.
Well, I thought he was going to be, I thought he was going to be a good hard man character. With, you know, Enforcer to have along for the ride, and but no, you know, no, or so, you know,
contract
I am the kiss of
I am the kiss of death. Jesus, hold on, I just said Cinta was my favorite this week. Let's see what happens next week.
Oh no.
Dear me.
Despite months of planning, the heist didn't go exactly as planned, and we lost half of the group, but they just really didn't plan for any chaos. And the only thing I had was, like, where was the rear guard? Surely they should have someone watching the elevator for people coming down, but that would be really the only criticism I had for the plan.
Well, I figured that probably would have been, I guess that would have been Skeen, because he was on Overwatch with that rifle on the top, right, wasn't he? But, I mean, they just got overthrown, you know, they got overrun. I mean, they didn't bank on old mustache boy coming running in after cracking the code or hearing the message. Yeah. Did he die or not?
Yes, pretty much sure he got shot. Yeah, pretty sure he got shot. Yeah.
So I quite liked him as well. Oh, well, that's another one. Yeah. Gone. Never mind.
All right, so how did you feel overall about the heist and the action we finally got to? I thought it was pretty satisfying. What did you think?
I think it was more than satisfying. I thought it ticked every single box, and I was surprised at the carnage, right? The death count.
Yeah.
Right? It was to lose Tamarin in like one shot, you know, and the whole Nemec like crushing his spine and the gold and then, you know, Skeen. I mean, I was taken aback. It was a very rare moment when you're watching a Star Wars TV show where I sat there and I was like, whoa. And I literally was like, okay, I'm going to watch this again straight away, because did I miss something with that?
Yeah.
It just ran at roller coaster pace. But nicely. So, and again, not to harp on again, but the music helped that along and it rolled.
The music was great.
Brilliant. And it was great. And I think. And I was, you know, I was assuming that would be it. But the final scene would be, you know, as Cassian's off and that's it, and we'd roll credits. But we got some extras.
But then, that leads me to my other point. We cut to the ISB, and Major Partagaz is making his announcement.
Oh, my God. This
and he says, "Don't get comfortable. This is not a meeting. No one is going home. Tell your staff, tell your families. I want every sector and planetary emergency retaliation plan in the building ready for presentation by midnight."
It's just going to get nasty. It's like basically, and somebody's going to come up and go, "I've got this idea. We're building this small moon, sir." Right. Get that ready. But this is clearly the moment where the Empire, his feathers are ruffled, and they realise, as Nemec predicted, that, you know, that they would pay attention to them, and as earlier as Cassie said, be careful what you wish for.
Exactly.
And indeed, now there is a target on their head. They've alerted them now, and it's game on.
Absolutely. They have caught the eye of the Empire, and they're there. The title kind of keeps coming back. But it's an interesting wording, is that they have planetary emergency retaliation plans. So they've got all plans set up for every planet to retaliate against them in case their grip on power loosens.
It's pretty ruthless, isn't it? You can just see Star Destroyers now just looming into atmosphere everywhere. I also love the little scene with Luthen when he's in his shop.
Yeah.
And the news comes across, and there's the guy in the front of the shop goes, "Oh, have you got anything from Aldani?" And he's like, oh.
"Yeah." And his blood runs cold for a second, thinking he's been busted.
Yeah, and then he goes, "Oh, I'll check in the back," and then like the joyous relief, like when he knows it's gone off. Wonderful, wonderful moment. And again, I thought, "Oh, that's it." But no, we then get a great scene with Mon Mothma, in the Senate. And
it's so cool to see that set again. I loved that set from the prequels of the Senate. I thought it was really cleverly done.
Interestingly, though, did you know that it's been rebuilt and looks different? Because Yoda fights in there, doesn't he? Yoda and who's Yoda fight?
Palpatine, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And so a lot of it gets trashed.
Strong am I with the Force.
What I love is, do you notice how empty and tomb-like quiet the Senate was? And there's just a little bit of noise. And you look around, and I'd say 70% of those pods are empty.
That's interesting.
Well, because we're now at the point, I looked at the timeline, and so basically Palpatine at this point has declared himself emperor. And so basically the Senate is just a puppet theatre at this point.
Yeah.
And I was starting to dig into this. And the Senate is dissolved because Tarkin mentions it in New Hope. And he mentions in passing that the Emperor has just dissolved the Senate. And that, so we are in the death row. So, like, Mon Mothma is there and there's literally no one left and all this of it. So this is probably one of the last times anyone is in it. And I bet you the ISB and all of those plans, this is probably the point that Palpatine goes, right, that's it, I'm dissolving the Senate. You're all corrupt. And that, so it was kind of interesting to see this, this puppet theatre happening around.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if we'll get some a cameo by the Emperor in this. I wonder as things expand, we'll get a nice visitation.
You would think it's hard not to, right? I don't know. Would we get Vader?
Well, who knows? Because it's really been building from very small, very regional, and now it's starting
sort of tied together, really, shouldn't it?
Yeah. So we shall see. They said this will be a series where you won't see lightsabers, but, you know, will we see the Emperor?
There's rumors you might see Tarkin and stuff. So,
right. That would make sense.
I hope they make his head 10% smaller, Jonathan.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit oversized. So that was an amazing episode. Let's move on to notes. All right, James, what notes do you have?
Well, Jonathan, going back to the fantastical Polaroid camera. I have another camera nerd point here as well. Did you notice on the top of the Imperial base where early on where they're talking about the eye and all the rest of it, did you notice the viewing camera unit?
I saw it, but I didn't. I saw, oh look, there's a tripod. But I didn't think what was on it.
So the front of it is a Rolleiflex. It's got the two lenses above each other. And the back is a Hasselblad CM500 body. It's literally two old school cameras welded together. I'm pretty sure. So.
which is really what they did to design all the weaponry in the original series. Exactly. Was they took old World War II guns and cut them up and put them together.
We can't be too harsh. I mean, like, fair play to him. I'd rather they did that than start, you know, sort of 3D printing magical space weaponry and technology. I mean, that's what's great about the Star Wars world. It's all clunky, mechanical.
Yeah. My headcanon theory is that they must have discovered 3D printing really early on, because they didn't really go in for miniaturization because everything was so easy to construct. There's no miniaturization in Star Wars, basically. Giant rooms, giant buildings. I think they had some sort of easy construction and an endless supply of material.
Well, I mean, if you go to Rise of Skywalker, I mean, you can build like thousands and thousands.
That's true.
Clearly, they just
hit print. Yeah, How many prints would you like? 1,000, please.
I'll have 1,000 Super Star Destroyers, please. Yeah. In your FedEx office. I got one of the sort of nerdy thing. Obviously, Satarin is revealed as an ex-stormtrooper, and
yeah.
this is the first account of a defecting stormtrooper in the timeline. Obviously, later on, we see Finn, John Boyega, sort of runs away from the First Order and stuff, but this is the first account of somebody realizing and defecting from the Empire and stuff. So it's kind of, it's a shame he died. Never mind.
I know.
He died a hero, Jonathan. He died a hero.
He did. Well, you know, but that was the thing that I liked. It was unceremonious. He was just like trying to cover someone and he just got hit as he was moving from cover to cover.
Back to your point, we said about that they when they did the reviews of Rogue One, they're like, no, everyone has to have a a heroic moment before they die. Whereas clearly here, they're like, no, you're toast. That's it. And I loved, I forgot to mention when you were going blow by blow through that, when Cassian, when they're ready to go, there is just, they look at his body for 1 second. Yeah. There's no, we've got to save him or drag his body on or anything. Yeah. It's just like, nah, doors go
no
up.
No one's screaming, we're no. Out.
Yeah, exactly. It's they just went.
No one's being held back as they try to.
Nobody's shedding a tear. Not then. They will shed it later around the fireplace as they drink their mednog.
Their mednog. My only note was it was quite funny to see some Kmart travel cups in that scene where the commandant and the colonel.
That's what they were. I was trying to
I've got two of them in my cupboard right now.
They looked very similar to a couple of my columns.
All right, well, let's move on. I have some news this week. All right, so reading from this article, for the purposes of the season one storyline, Andor's teams were based near the Cruachan Dam near Glasgow in Scotland. Yeah. And while the building itself was used, as well as the structural tunnels, many artificial sets were built from scratch for the shoot. Luke Hull of Disney said, "We were intrigued with the idea that we could build a planet around the Scottish Highlands because so many of the Star Wars planets are desert or ice. So it was interesting to find a tangible landscape that could form a different version of a planet. And if you look at the dam, it looks like Darth Vader's mask. So the notion of everything that we're trying to do with the series is to suggest that the Empire was a bit of a blight on the landscape. So it was perfect."
Yeah.
So that's interesting. It's the Cruachan Dam in near Glasgow, and I've had a look, and it does exist. So
is it fully there? It's not one of those where you get there and there's four sort of bricks left of it, and it's
it's a proper working dam in the Highlands of Scotland, and but they don't have that tower or anything else nearby. But the dam is there, and it does look like the grill of Darth Vader's mask.
No.
All right, so that's it for the news, but that brings us to Only in Star Wars. All right, James, did you have an Only in Star Wars moment?
I did, mate, I did. I have a couple, actually. So,
go on.
It's all science-based, John, this was it?
Yes.
As you know, I have slight ties to another Star franchise.
Yes.
So this is what James, I loved.
James, for our new listeners, has photographed many of the posters in the Star Trek universe.
So what I love about this, and it's a very Star Wars moment, is there's no clever scanning device or high beam medical tool. When Nemec's on the table, the good old forearm doctor he's got a cattle syringe in one hand, and his other two of his other arms have got which look like just really sort of brutal sort of like pliers and sort of like tools and stuff. And again, it just takes us into the way you divide these two different franchises up. One of them deals in sort of like shiny glowing touchscreens and panels and like mythical things, and this one is all visceral mechanical levers, knobs, and sort of things. And that was very very good. So
no, you're right, it was definitely a chop dock in a dark alley that they used, but it was my only in Star Wars moment. It was very similar because it was the four-armed doctor. And if we go off the last week's one that I said was you only need to add a couple of extra horns to a goat to make it a space goat. Yeah. You just need to add a couple of extra arms to make it a space doctor. So we're continuing the theme here in Star Wars.
adding limbs and members to create.
Yeah, but it looked like one of those, you know, when you someone stands with their arms behind their back and someone else puts their other arms in, and yeah, it was a little bit off. But I found him amusing, and the eyewear reminded me of Maz Kanata.
You're right. I think very, very similar to her eye, right?
Yeah. Who I really liked as a character. Mm. That the first movie I actually didn't mind. I thought Ray was actually likable in that, and there were some good moments, but I digress. Yes. So that was my only in Star Wars.
You were going down the Johnson road again, I think. Yeah, the forearm doctor was a nice touch. I mean, you know, that's I love the fact that when Cassian comes in, he's got the gun and he puts all four arms up. I did everything I could.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, so that was only in Star Wars, and we'll be right back with the listener feedback. Okay, so welcome to the listener feedback section. Send in your comments at the Podcastica Facebook page.
And join the group. It's really fun, promise. There's lots of discussion on there about your favourite shows, and all your favourite hosts are there too to interact with. Honest.
We're still waiting for our first voicemail. You can go to the podcastica.com page, and there's the contact page, and on the right there's a voice message tab that you can hit, or just record one on your phone and email it to talk@podcastica.com.
We're still waiting. Come on, Rian Johnson, we need you. Come on, just give it to us. Come on, I dare you. Yeah. Anyway, or anyone else, just if you want to rant and shout at us, we're used to it. It's fine. So just give us some feedback.
Yeah, give us some feedback. Come on, let's hear from you. And I'll put those links up on the podcast notes so you can link to it right from your phone. All right, so our feedback.
Yeah, and our first letter comes from Phil. And Phil says, "Hi, guys, just following up on you saying you would love to see a funny version of The Office-style show set in the Star Wars universe. Can I direct you to these short videos, 5 minutes? Because they are totally the funniest fan films that Star Wars have ever made. Each one of them has an older, jaded stormtrooper and a younger, one fresh one out of training." All right, okay. Yeah. Some group has made them. It's a total CGI film. In particular, First Day and the Battlefield are particularly awesome. All right, I'm definitely going to check these out because I love all that. I mean, anyway, otherwise, just Google Star Wars First Day. Hope you enjoy them as much as I did. Cheers, Phil. That's some good information. I love that because one of my favorite things in The Mandalorian is those two. Those two scout bikers trying to shoot the tin can, what I'm trying to do. I will be checking that out.
Phil sent us a couple of links, and I watched one of them. It was really funny, the interaction between the two stormtroopers standing guard was very funny. So we'll post those links in our notes as well.
Right.
All right, so Steve Barr. Hello, Steve. Steve Barr says, "You know what this tense high sequence needs? Every 30 seconds we cut to half-hearted Aldani celebrations." And I've read your comments, Stephen, and I must say that on my subsequent rewatches, the Aldanis did seem a little bit annoying and a bit half-hearted. And Steve goes on to, sorry, Steve ruined it for me.
Brian Cranston was having a great time.
He was.
He was a little bit riled about his goat skin, but apart from that, he was all right.
Exactly. And Steve also says he's glad to see Cassian keep up his record of killing at least one person of every planet he visits.
Yes.
Exactly. He's ruthless, our Cassian.
He is. He's going to have the death sentence on six systems or whatever very soon, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then we hear from Christian Alberg again. Man, what an intense episode. I really thought it played out like a finale. Yeah, you're right. We all thought that too, yeah. So I'm really looking forward to the second half of the season. As we discussed earlier, I think this is a clever way to sort of pace this. So it's great to have a mid-season finale without it then leading us to like a six-week wait for the next episode.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not a Walking Dead scenario where, we're going to do this and split it up. So, Christian carries on to say, "The plan wasn't a great one from the start, especially with the lack of trust seemingly everywhere. I did not expect Skeen to turn out the way he did, and I hope to God that wasn't a test. Great episode. Loving this show so much. Yeah, I'm there with you, Christian. I swear that was a test. Poor old Skeen was not. Yeah. He was not expecting.
Yeah. Yeah, I was expecting Cassian to go and I've just taken out Skeen. He's going to do a runner on us. And they're like, no, that was just a test for you. Actually, he was always on our side. You've just murdered someone again, yeah. Cassian.
So what did Val call him? But it should have been, you stupid bastard. Yeah, like, test. So, I'm sorry, this is Star Wars. What happened to sending your gun to stun? Come on, Cassian. Yeah. I mean, you could have had the little blue rings. You could have sent out Cheerios and just knocked him out. You could have done that. But yeah, you're right, Kristen. It was pretty shocking to see poor old Skeen sort of gone like that. But
he will be missed.
Let's pause for a moment, Skeen.
Yes, pause to remember Skeen and his shirtless moments.
Great tattoos.
Yeah. All right, so Bianx Vargas says, oh, I'm going to watch that again and again. Hearts, smiley heart face, crying smile, hands in the air, hands in the air, hands in the air.
Yeah. Sounds like one of my rave days, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Adam Buckley says, great episode, lots of action and twists. Can't wait to find out what he gets up to next. Well, what he's going to get to next, Adam, is going to read that book and realise he was really sorry.
Yeah.
And then he's going to come
back. And that he is a rebel.
Yeah. Deep down.
All right. We get to hear from our fearless leader once again. And I think Jason's going to join us next week, which would be great.
Excellent.
Jason says, fantastic episode. But I don't know for sure how much of that is just taking 5 episodes to get all worked up for a climax. I feel like the next 6 episodes might just be smoking cigarettes in bed. And I'm all into that as long as Bix is involved. Jason goes on to say, just kidding, it was spectacular. I'm sad that Karras Nemec died. I kind of thought he would the second he first appeared on screen, but what a great character. Intelligent and full of philosophical and political ideas and just really engaging. Teary face. I was glad Andor killed Avril Skeen. As we all did, the Skeen was planned to kill him the first chance he got.
Oh, no, Jason, we're going to have words next week. We're going to have words.
Last, I love Faye Marcey's portrayal of Vel Sartha. As the waif in Game of Thrones, who beat up Arya every chance she got, she became one of those actors who people associate with their awful characters. So I'm glad to see her getting a second chance to play the heroic type. Yes, good points. And it's funny when people treat the characters in real life as if they were real.
Yeah, like you feel, it's like it's not real. It's like,
yeah. Well, the guy that played Joffrey, he gave up acting. The poor bastard.
He's living in a cave, isn't he, somewhere?
Yeah, exactly.
He's had plastic surgery.
All right, well, thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out all the other shows as well. There's plenty on
there. There was a great season of Cobra Kai. I hope everyone's been watching that. That's a great palate cleanser. And it's a show that's full of heart. And I can't believe they keep pulling it off every week as well. It's a really good show. So check that out.
How many seasons is that now?
They've done 5. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, they've done 5.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a binge for me.
And it takes me by surprise. Yeah, absolutely. Because I was on the plane and I get a little emotional watching these things on the plane. And so a tear was shed.
Cobra Kai is one of those, every season I watch the first episode and go, really? And then by the end of episode 2, you're hooked back in. And
exactly.
They do a great job writing it. So, I'll definitely check that one out.
Yeah, so check out the podcast as well. And if you're listening to this on House Podcastica and you're not interested in the other shows on there, we also have a podcast just for you Star Wars fans, which you can find at podcastica.com or just search for the Star Wars TV cast on your podcast app.
Nice. And as you said, every week, don't forget to rate us, review us, follow us, tell your friends about us, make us famous, just do whatever you can.
That's right. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening. I'm James.
And I'm Jonathan.
And may the Force be with you.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.